You're listening to the Utah Man Podcast, bringing you the latest news and analysis for your Utah Utes. Now, your hosts, Cameron, Ryan, and Scott.
Welcome on into the Utah Man Podcast. On this episode, we're talking the recent commits for football and basketball, some Ute news, Utes getting drafted, and we finish up with some championship rings for the football team. I'm Cameron, and we got Ryan.
Hey, Ute Nation.
And Scott.
Hey, Ute Country.
Good one. Way to open up the show.
I'm trying to test the audience. Are we more of a Ute Nation or are we more of a Ute Country?
Let's take an instant poll.
Well, I'm in San Bernardino.
So this week, Utah picks up two much-needed commits, both transfers, Alex Locklear from Marshall, and a kicker out of UCLA in Andrew Strouch. So let's first look at Alex Locklear. So again, transferred from Marshall. He's 6'5", 330. He put on 40 pounds since he got into Marshall. He played guard and tackle. I'll kick it over to you guys. What are your guys' first initial thoughts when you saw Utah getting an offensive lineman with experience?
I just think we need bodies. Getting anybody at this point on the offensive line is going to help out. It just gives us more options to fill and plug some holes, because there's just so many unknowns and so many questions in regards to the O-line currently. But I'm just not so sure, if Locklear was a three-year, starter at Marshall, it would give me a little bit more confidence. But it does look like he's gotten even though he only has a handful of starts in his career, he's been part of the rotation, playing pretty significant amount of snaps last year and really the last couple of years at a number of different positions on the O-line. So I think it's good. He's going to be able to come in and at the very least, whether he earns a starting position, he at least gives us a little bit more depth and experience at a number of positions. So I think it's a great move. Although I wish it was maybe a little bit higher tier grad transfer that we brought in here.
Yeah, I mean, kind of along the same lines there. It's as we all know, offensive line is our biggest need at this point. And Scott's right. It's another body to go in there and work and practice and compete. And really just add to the depth. I mean, I don't really know if he's going to pan out.
I mean, obviously you guys are making great points, right? Utah needs the depth. I know that's one thing Whittingham kind of talked about in spring ball is getting the offensive line up to a higher level. The thing that I really like about him, what I mentioned earlier, 330 pounds. I mean, that's a big boy. And he's put on 40 pounds since high school. So to me, it shows that he's dedicated. He wants to get bigger. He wants to get better.
It seems like he's dedicated to eating.
It's 40 pounds of cheeseburgers.
But he's still... granted, yes, but sometimes it's hard for guys to put on weight like that. 40 pounds is a lot, but the ability for him to that he played guard and tackle at Marshall, I think really helps Utah, because they do need depth at all the positions on the O-line.
Yeah, the O-line is, as Ryan just mentioned, it's bar none the biggest question mark going into the season, and with all the talent that we have, really at the quarterback position, running back position, even the wide receiver position. It's really not the year be in this position to be so short on experience and just guys on the offensive line. And I know, come fall camp, I think things are going to be fine. But right now there's a lot of red flags going up on this O-line and the lack of experience, the lack of guys that we've got. And so definitely a big question mark, but I'm interested to just to get to fall camp, kind of hold off on all this paranoia and just get to fall camp and kind of see how things play out when we get there. You know, really against BYU, we'll see really where we are and if it's going to be an issue we're going to have to deal with all season long.
We've seen over the past several years the job that Jim Harding does as the season goes on. He typically gets these guys to gel. Sometimes it takes a few games. It'd be really disappointing if we had all these pieces surrounding the offense and really the weak link is the offensive line, which causes the offense to struggle. So hopefully these guys that are coming in can add dividends or at least Harding's got a big coaching job ahead of him.
And to those points, we'll definitely see where this line is when, you know, Alex gets in and players like Bam that haven't been on campus yet get added to the fold and see how that goes forward. Now let's shift over to the kicker. Chaden Johnston retires from football. He probably was going to be the starter. UCLA kicker Andrew Strouch commits to Utah as a grad transfer. And it's really interesting because I don't think a lot of people even knew he was looking to transfer.
I don't think many people knew he existed.
He didn't play a lot at UCLA. We'll get into that. But at least getting a kicker into the program to at least add competition to that position is always good. So his numbers real quick. 2018, his only stats were he punted 3 times. He filled in against Stanford and punted. 2017, he didn't play at all. 2016, he went 9-for-9 on PATs. He was 1-for-2 on field goals. And I believe his one make was against Utah. So yeah, so a guy that hasn't had a ton of experience at UCLA and looking for playing time. But I know he's a kicker, and I actually did. This is probably like the most research I've ever done on a kicker. His high school, he was 7-of-10 for field goals, 63-of-66 for PATs. I even have one, like a camp that he went to in high school, and this is what they said about him. Andrew is an excellent kicker. The lefty has a nice leg and makes kicks with great consistency. Field goals are a real strength. Kickoffs have improved tremendously. Continues to show steady improvement from camp to camp. A confident kicker that does well under pressure. Andrew has the tools to compete at the next level. A fine young man with a great attitude and work ethic has a bright future.
Man, he's not going to miss a field goal after that one.
Guys, come on. That was written by his mother.
But this is what I like.
That was the best letter of reference I've ever seen.
That was basically his obituary.
All right. Well, guys, it, at least we're getting a kicker in. You know, create that competition. We'll see how he does against Jaden Redding, who was here all for spring ball, to kind of see who will be the starter come game day against BYU.
With the 47th pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the Seattle Seahawks select Marquise Blair, DB, Utah.
The Seattle Seahawks select Cody Martin, linebacker from Utah.
The San Francisco 49ers select Mitch Wishnowsky, punter from Utah.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Matt Gay, kicker out of Utah.
The Indianapolis Colts, Jackson Barton, tackle Utah.
So the past weekend was the NFL draft. I think it was a great weekend for the Utes. You know, I think if you look at their last couple draft classes or guys that were eligible to be drafted, not to take anything away from these seniors, but it kind of seemed like this was maybe a smaller group compared to other ones. But overall, I want to say it was pretty successful for the Utes to get 5 guys drafted and then everyone signed either to as a free agent or invited to minicamp.
Yeah, huge. This program just continues to turn out talent and put them in the league, which, you know, social media, Twitter was just barraged over the weekend with all of these national commentators talking about Utah and the fact that they don't recruit with the UCLAs, the USCs of the world, and yet they're putting way more draft picks into the league each and every year. I mean, this draft, as successful as it was, and even in years past, I mean, Utah has got to get the message out. They've got to start telling all their recruits that they are the best. They are ranked the best player development program in the country. They're not, you know, we're just not signing the sheer amount of four or even five star guys that these big time programs do year in and year out. We're beating them in draft picks. And, you know, it's just, we've got to market that. We've got to get that message out. And again, you know, to an extent, a lot of these kids, it's not good enough for them. They're still going to go for the shiny uniforms and the blue blood schools. But kids that really want to work hard, that want to buy into the program and get coached at a very high level and continually be pushed, have the ability to get to the league at Utah. And there's not a lot of programs that necessarily can do that, even with four and five star kids.
So out of all the guys that got drafted, who were you guys the most kind of shocked or surprised with, either they got picked or how high they got picked?
I would say Mitch Wishnowsky going in the fourth round was a bit of a shocker. You just typically don't see a punter go that high, you know, and then that's followed up by Matt Gay, you know, two special teamers getting drafted in the fourth and fifth round. I think that's pretty remarkable, and that sends a pretty strong message special teams wise. I thought it was pretty cool seeing Blair go in the second round. You know, he was a JC guy, just not a real heralded recruit when we got him 2 years ago. And he came in here and he's just beat heads in and just blast people. And that got the attention of NFL teams, especially Pete Carroll. You know, he talks about just wanting guys that are thumpers. And that proved to be enough to get Blair into the second round. And I mean, he got picked over Rapid Washington to go play in Seattle. I think that speaks volumes right there for what they see in him and his abilities at the next level.
I think the biggest surprise for me was definitely Wishnowsky. Not that he doesn't have the ability to be drafted, but how often do you see a team pick a guy that's going to guarantee him where he's selected over $3 million and have that be a kicker? I mean, that's crazy. I mean, that great for him, and I mean, that shows what they think of his abilities. But I mean, that was probably the biggest shock for me.
Well, and when you say a kicker, I mean, he's not even putting points on the board. I mean, he's just
flipping the field.
He's flipping the field. He's not helping the team put points on the board. And I mean, and you saw it in the conversations that the 49ers had. They did not want to let Mitch get away. And, you know, that's how highly they thought of him and how important they thought he would be to get on that team. So it speaks volumes, really, to the type of kicker that he is and the impact that he can have. And really, Utah special teams is looking really, really good at this moment.
And Mitch was the first player that signed a contract in this draft, too. So something to kind of look at. The 49ers really wanted him.
Well, he didn't want the 49ers to change their mind either.
I think for me, the biggest surprise was Cody Barton going in the third round. And really, it's just, I think the overall surprise was just how much Cody has grown in the Utah program. I mean, heck, a year ago, who would have thought that he would have been drafted and drafted in the third round? Speaks volumes, yeah, I mean, again, to your point, Scott, about player development under a Winningham program. You know, guys that I won't beat around the bush. He wasn't an NFL guy 2 years ago to now going in the third round. That speaks volumes. Dude, and I think that's something recruits look at.
You could argue he wasn't a Pac-12 guy 2 years ago, let alone an NFL guy. I mean, he was getting ridiculed by this fan base for missed tackles, being out of position. Just, you know, he had his struggles early on. you know, of. But I mean, credit to him. Who in this program has kind of come through that situation where being really so shaky to turning into being one of the biggest studs on a great defense and turning that into a third round draft pick? I mean, it's really somewhat unheard of to make that type of progress in that amount of time and completely turn the tables on his reputation.
So out of the four guys that weren't drafted, Chase Hansen, Ballard, Lowe, and Agasiva, out of those four guys, who do you guys think may have the best chance at making an NFL roster come season opener?
I mean, that's kind of tough because, you know, there's always a need for offensive linemen. So I think they have both Agasiva and Falamaka have a good shot. But from an athletic standpoint, I really think the only reason Chase didn't get drafted is because two reasons. He's a little bit injury prone, as we've seen throughout his career here, and he wasn't able to work out due to injury. So as long as he's healthy and gets a fair shot with the Saints, I don't see why he wouldn't make the team.
I think he's got a great shot. I think all of those guys have a pretty good opportunity to make the team. Whether, you know, maybe in some cases it's only going to be practice squad type opportunity for some of them. But I think Chase Hansen's almost a lock. You don't get a guy who was nearly the Pac-12 player of the year, probably should have been Pac-12 player of the year, and then not even make an NFL squad or practice squad. I think, as Ryan pointed out, the only reason he didn't get drafted is he's old and he's got injuries. Nobody was going to, you know, really waste a draft pick on that, or at least anything that's maybe only a late round draft pick. But I think he's going to be the perfect type of special teams player that the NFL will drool over. I mean, take example, the Saints. They've got a has-been quarterback that's a special teams ace for them right now, and getting all the attention in the world. Now you bring them another Mormon that can play special teams, and they're going to be stacked. So it's I think it's a pretty—
that's Latter-day Saint to you.
Latter-day Saint. But no, I think he's a lock. I would be absolutely shocked if he does not make the team.
I definitely agree with you guys. I think Hansen's kind of the easy pick there. I'm really rooting for. I mean, I'm rooting for all of them. But I think it'd be fun to see Ballard stick with the Panthers. That's a guy, you know, who came in and worked his butt off at the U. Really hoping to kind of hear his name in the later rounds, but it didn't happen for him. But at least, you know, he signed as a free agent with the Panthers, and hopefully, you know, he gets that fair shot.
If all these guys put in the work that they put in at Utah to get where they were here, they'll have a chance. Hopefully it pays off for them.
My last thought on the draft: having to cheer for the Seahawks is really going to be hard for me.
I agree.
There's a couple Utes up there, but I'll do it for them, I guess.
Well, at this point, you kind of got to cheer for most every team in the league because there's Utes all over the league.
Good point.
That's true. I mean, the presence is growing, and it not to get off topic. I mean, it's really not off topic, but if you want to project out next year's draft, if every one of these guys plays well and stays healthy, you could see eight or so guys get drafted next year off this team.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I mean, obviously this is maybe head in the clouds a little bit, but if things go well, there's a chance you could see 11 Utes drafted next year, which would be unheard of for Utah. I mean, give me a break. That's how much potential is on this team. And there's a number of guys that are going to go early in Jalen Johnson, Leckie Fotu, and Zach Moss. You know, those three alone probably are, you know, first couple of rounds, maybe third round at the latest. But there's so much talent on this team coming back next year that I think they're going to be able to have a huge, huge year in the draft.
And that's why I said to kind of start this segment out, this was supposed to be, you know, kind of the smaller, quote unquote, weaker draft class they've had in some seasons. They still have a very successful draft for Utah. As we go on with the show, we'd like to let you know that we're brought to you by DoubleTree Suites by Hilton in Salt Lake City, 110 West, 600 South. Give them a call at 801-359-7800, or you can always check them out at hilton.com. All right, so before we finish talking about football, I did want to bring up one subject that kind of hit Twitter this week. So Utah gave out a championship ring for the South Division. I'm okay with it. I think it's for the players. It's for the kids. It gets them excited. Helps recruiting, I think, as well. But what were you guys' thoughts kind of about the rings? Should they have done it for South Division?
I couldn't care less, really. I mean, you're right, Cam. It is for the players, and if the team wants to recognize what they did, I'm all for it.
I think it's silly. I mean, give me a break. If this is the experience for the players, they accomplished something that no other team at the University of Utah has ever accomplished, and they played for a Pac-12 title. Yeah, they didn't win. So, but guess what, guys? The ring doesn't say Pac-12 champions on it. So it's not like we're doing some false advertising here. I don't see a big issue with it at all. You know, those guys accomplished something that it was still pretty darn big. And heck, they lost the bowl game, so they couldn't get bowl rings, so they had to get them somewhere. So I think I have no problem with it. And at the end of the day, you know, it's something that those guys are going to be able to take and remember for the rest of their lives. And I think if people are outraged about it, I just think it's silly because, why does it matter?
Well, and every, you know, Power 5 conference does this. You have to keep up with the Joneses as far as you know, big-time programs. So now let's kind of shift over into the basketball with the Running Utes. So this week in the Deseret News, there was, you know, an article with Larry. Scott, I want to kick it over to you. Let's kind of break down what was going on with Larry in that article.
You know, it was kind of like a soap opera, Days of Our Lives article, man. It was, I don't think it came across in all that positive on Larry. Kind of just defending himself, defending his staff, defending decisions that they've made. And I don't know. It just kind of, to me, it kind of came across a little pouty, a little bit. But, you know, he makes some good points. Obviously, there's definitely some lines in there in the article that Ute fans did not like. And, you know, I don't necessarily agree with him either, but, you know, this is the Des News. Who knows how much of it you can trust, but, but, you know, obviously Larry, I think Larry's in a position where he feels the heat. He knows fans are not happy about the lack of getting to the tournament and all the transfers and just all the negativity that's surrounding the program at the moment. And, you know, I think it was he probably looked at it as an opportunity to, you know, defend himself, defend his program. And to an extent, you know, it came across, or he had some moment there basically saying kind of the fans need to stay out of my business. And I think that falls down to a lot that goes on with player transfers that fans don't know about. They don't know all the nitty gritty details that are happening behind the scenes and why a player leaves, or maybe why a player is shown the door. And all we see is just another player leaving and everybody goes overreacts about it. And so to an extent, I can understand where he's coming from, but I'm not sure it put the best light on he or the program at the moment.
I don't think he has any room to tell the fans what to think. I mean, in 8 seasons, he's been to the NCAA tournament twice, been to the NIT three times, and that means they've gone nowhere three times. I think the fans have every right to be upset and wanting to know what's going on with that program. It shouldn't take a school like Utah this long to get back to where they need to be. They should be in the NCAA tournament almost every year.
Oh, and I like the idea of my coach being disappointed we didn't make the NIT. That either tells you he literally had zero expectations for that team last year, and maybe getting to the NIT would have been a huge accomplishment, or it just tells you maybe the expectations aren't where they need to be. I don't know, but you know, a lot can be said about the situation that they're in, the transfers, the constant player turnover, and you know, not recruiting at the level necessary to really compete in the Pac-12 and get to the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot of fans, and a lot of fans, I mean, attendance hasn't been all that great. You know, it's definitely taken a step back, even though it's probably one of the better ones. I think it's finished second or third this year in the conference. But there's a lot of room for growth, and he admits that. But at this point, we got to start seeing some results. And you know, there's some more player turnover going on right now. Another commit that we'll jump into here in a minute. But some of these additions have got to be huge additions, because they've got to work out, and they've got to work out quick.
So I'm a big Larry fan. I'm not going to hide it. I think he's a good coach. But I agree with what's being said, and I think this article, it's almost like Larry's finally letting it out that things are getting to him. I mean, let's just look at his current situation. The AD who hired him isn't there. His biggest supporter in the booster ranks is no longer there. I mean, we are
hearing, with us.
Sorry, yes, and all due respect. We are hearing rumblings of boosters maybe, you know, being unhappy with Larry. And maybe this article, I don't know, maybe I'm reading in too much into it, reading too much into it, but it seems like the frustration of everything, all the negativity pointing towards Larry has finally maybe reached his point, and it came out in this article.
Scott said it right in the beginning that he's feeling the heat. I think it's not only the fans he's feeling it from. I think he's feeling it from boosters. I think he's feeling it from Mark Harlan. And I think he knows he needs to produce, or he's going to be shown the door.
You know, this is my personal gripe. You know, he defends, you know, the fact that they exceeded expectations again in the regular season. And I think we need to get past, and I agree, they did. They exceed expectations every year. But basically, then we're admitting that whatever the media picks is accurate, and simply exceeding that expectation is good enough for your program, I think is silly. I don't care how many times we finish in the top four. If we finish in the top four and we keep losing in the first round of the Pac-12 tournament, what good does it do you? I'd rather finish eighth and go upset somebody, for crying out loud, and make a run in the tournament. So, yes, do we want to finish in the top four and get a bye? But if you can't take advantage of it, what's the point? At some point, his teams have got to start doing something beyond the regular season. You have got to be good enough to put yourself in a position where you can do something in the postseason. And that's the problem. At the end of the day, nobody remembers good regular seasons. They remember what you did in the postseason. And until Larry and the staff and program start doing that again, it's not going to be good. I don't care how many times we finish in the top four. If it doesn't lead to anything, I just don't care.
If you look back at Majerus's tenure, that's what he's remembered for. I mean, he had some good regular seasons, but he's remembered because he constantly went to Sweet 16s, obviously a couple of Elite Eights and Final Four and championship game. I mean, that you're right. It is postseason.
Well, and I mean, that year in 1998, we lost two regular season games. It was an amazing regular season. Nobody remembers it. Why? Because we went to the Final Four. That's what's remembered. It's postseason play, and it's the same with football. It's what you do in bowl games or getting yourself to the playoff. You know, yes, obviously you want to be consistent and you want to have good regular seasons, and they're necessary to put yourself in a position to accomplish those postseason goals. But the regular season is not an end-all be-all. You have to go beyond that, and at some point this program has to do it. Or you got to get a new coach that can get the job done, because, you know, we're just kind of spinning in circles at this pace.
So stepping aside from the article now, there are some changes with the program. So Coach Slocum left, went to UNLV. Donnie Daniels coming back from Gonzaga. It looks like he will be more of a back office, almost like an assistant to Larry, kind of help him there. He won't be on the bench. So Utah is currently interviewing for that position for a bench coach. What we're hearing is that Larry really wants a guy with AAU ties. So pretty much he needs someone that can recruit.
You got to have some connections to the AAU circuit and these teams, because that's how you get players. Or unless you're like Arizona, you just pay for them. But you've got to be able to get those guys, and Slocum was the connection on that staff to go and get those and the AAU guys and have the contacts and was a big part of the recruiting process. And so by losing him, you have to get somebody who's got some experience, who's got some ties and can produce players, because you just cannot continue to get fringe players and then rely on exceeding expectations with those guys. You got to get some stars. You got to get some studs. And I think this hire is probably going to be pretty darn crucial to Larry, because he's getting the end of his rope, and they've got to produce, and you got to get some studs to help you do that. So I'll be interested to see kind of, there's a couple of names that have, Not necessarily big names that I've heard, but guys that are heavily involved in the AAU circuit. It'll be interesting to see if that's the route they go.
I agree with those points, Scott. And again, you know, a lot of change with this Utah program with Slocum leaving. You know, and Jace Johnson, who, you know, going to be the starting center, is transferring. He was at Nebraska. Now he's visiting Marquette. You know, kind of crazy. You know, a guy that would get significant time is looking to leave. Obviously, we've heard other, you know, kind of reasons why. But do you guys think it's going to hurt the program next season not having, you know, a veteran center?
Well, it all depends on if these young guys coming in can step up and kind of fill that void. I definitely think it's a loss, because I think Jace is, for all the criticism he gets, he's come a long way, and he's really started to, I would say over the last half of last season, he was pretty solid game in and game out. He was never going to be a superstar, but he was good defensively down low. He rebounded well. And he even had some moments where he was pretty good offensively. I think he could have had probably a pretty good year here at Utah. But from everything I've heard, that, he wanted a bigger role. And not sure, didn't sound like the coaching staff was all in favor of how big of a role he wanted. And therefore, he's out visiting the Nebraskas and Marquettes and seeing what option he can get out there.
Yeah, I think even if these younger guys step up and we end up not missing him from a standpoint of his play on the floor, it's just another black eye for the program when another starter leaves and transfers out. It's just becoming the norm for the program.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look good for the program, what you're saying, and look good for Larry. And obviously, not everyone who has left on their own. Sometimes it's been the program needing to move on, not necessarily the player moving on. I'm never going to fault a kid for transferring. It's their life. It's their basketball career. Whatever they want to do with it, it's their right. I think the timing is very interesting in this aspect for Jace. A big news, though, a big positive for Utah is they got a new commit, Brendan Wenzel, a shooting guard from Texas. I think this is a very good get for Utah, especially after losing, you know, Parker Van Dyke and Bearfield to graduation. A kid who shot 41% from three in high school, and again, you know, that's high school. College is a whole nother level, especially Division One. But if a kid can shoot in high school, a lot of times that leads to believe they can shoot in college, or at least have a good chance at it. And I think Utah really needed more outside shooting, and I think Wenzel's really going to help out in that.
Yeah, it was a must need. They had to add some shooters, otherwise next year was going to be real difficult. And granted, he's going to be a true freshman, young guy, but he's got great size at 6'6", and really a pretty darn good shooter. And if he can continue to develop that, and just his body alone, we really need more guys in the program that have that type of length. You know, you see that at the Oregons, the USC, the Arizonas of the conference. And we don't have that consistently. We don't have that size and athleticism. Obviously, you know, he's not a huge recruit, so hopefully he can come in and kind of exceed expectations and really develop into a big time player. But I think he's got some important skill sets that every team needs, and he can shoot the ball and he can shoot it well. And even if that's all you get from him early as a freshman, I think that's going to be enough, because you're going to need that outside shooting, losing, as you mentioned, Bearfield and Parker Van Dyke. And that's just a huge hole and a void that had to be filled by somebody. They tried some graduate transfers and JC's, you know, nothing's really panned out. Who knows if with Chase leaving, if they're going to still make another addition to the program. But at least he was a must get with not being able to get some of these other guys that they went after.
Well, I think that's a great spot to end the episode on a high note on basketball. Yes, it can kind of be down at times, but with this recruiting class, it looks like things are looking up, and hopefully things can continue to get turned around. And again, I'm a big Larry fan. I hope he's here for quite a while and he has success. Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
At Drum and Feather. That's Drum, the letter N, Feather.
Scott?
You can find me at UteMan _forever.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Utah Man Podcast. You can always catch us at our home at utahmanpodcast.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us anywhere you listen to a podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. We are on all the platforms, so go ahead and subscribe and give us a rating. We appreciate that. Until next time, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Go Utes. We'll be till I die, kayay.
We're good. Let's cut it.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are their own and are no way affiliated with the University of Utah.
The CH is silent, Ken.
I hate you. I hate you. All right.
I think it's spelled Andrew, or it's pronounced Andrew Gerdry.
I hate you. In my phone, it looks like Ryan is like looking up at Scott.
I'm looking up at my TV.
You know what it is? It's the Brady Bunch. It's the opening of the Brady Bunch.
Here's the story.
Hi, Greg and Alex. What are you doing over there? Catch it, Peter.
Oh my God.
Oh, Jan.
The article didn't talk about this, but I've heard through the grapevine that Larry is going to be putting some rings together for the team that says we almost made the NIT.
Oh my gosh.
And cut.